This is Taking Care in Business, a podcast that dives into the topic of corporate social responsibility from many different perspectives. Host Kathy Pedrotti-Hayes is an expert in CSR and philanthropic giving, and her co-host, Vicki Bolson, is the founder and CEO of Bolson Group, a unified marketing company that was also the first B Corp certified company in Indiana. Kathy and Vicki became friends and equally passionate about CSR when they first worked together several years ago. Join them as they talk about why it is always worthwhile to take care in business.
Hey, Kathy.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. I'm doing great this weekend. I got a bunch of things done. I've been cleaning out basements and offices and closets and all this kind of stuff. And I was very cognizant of what I was recycling. Especially
good.
After talking, doing our pre-interview with our next guest, who he taught me so much about what and how to, you know, recycle things and where to take them. And I have this big list of, okay, this pile of stuff, I need to call and find out where to take it, who I can donate it to. How are you doing with your organization?
Well, you know, I started out doing pretty well, and I've sort of petered out. So I need to get back into my organization. When all this stuff started, I was kind of a demon cleaning my house and getting stuff, but now I've become a little bit complacent, so I need to get back out there. But I totally agree. Actually, I have referenced our next guest pre-interview probably 3 or 4 times since we had it, because she gave such great information.
Yeah, right after we got off the call with her, I had been thinking about getting a second recycling bin for, you know, trash mm-hmm. pickup. And I did, because I don't know about you, but I have more recycling than I do trash.
Probably. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. And they only pick up recycling every other week. So I think that's probably contributes to
that's
it.
That's true. Yeah.
But anyway, I learned so much from her, and I can't wait for others to. Allison Mitchell is our guest, and she is the executive director of the Indiana Recycling Coalition. I'm going to call it IRC for the rest of the introduction. The IRC is a statewide not-for-profit formed in 1989 to support waste reduction, reuse, composting, and recycling activities in Indiana. Previously, Allison owned a sustainability planning and consulting company and worked with Prosperity Indiana. She has extensive background in environmental sustainability, public policy, design, and law, and has worked in the fields of landscape architecture, commercial real estate development, nonprofit management, and higher education. Formerly, she was a founding member of the City of Indianapolis's Office of, that's a hard word for me today, sustainability, and developed and taught the graduate-level course Sustainability Assessment at IUPUI's School of Public Environmental Affairs, which is SPIA, for those in Indiana who are so familiar with that. Allison graduated from Purdue University with a degree in landscape horticulture and design, and immediately went on to grad studies at the University of Michigan. In 2012, she graduated from IU's McKinley School of Law with a JD degree. In her spare time, which I don't know how she has any, she enjoys hiking, cycling, cooking, and traveling. And she's from Greensburg, Indiana, lives in Indianapolis with her husband and 2 young sons. Allison is passionate in her role as executive director of Indiana Recycling Coalition. She says, recycling, most people don't realize, is a huge economic development opportunity in the state of Indiana. So we have her here today to talk more about what she means and how she plans to help get this done. Welcome, Allison.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
So, Allison, does recycling work? Why should I do it?
That's a great question. And that is, I wish it were a very simple answer. And it is a simple answer in that, yes, it does work, but it shouldn't be the only thing you do, and it should definitely not be the focus of what you do when it comes to managing materials in your life.
Okay, so take me down that. What should we be focusing on then?
So everyone's familiar with the old adage, the reduce, reuse, recycle. And we, for years in this country, we have been very focused on recycle. And that's, mm-hmm. that's good. We should recycle. But reduce and reuse come first in that lineup for a reason. So we've kind of gotten away over the years from the focus being in the right place. And recycling should be kind of the act of last resort when it comes to how we think about materials in our world. So yes, recycle. But if you're only recycling and you're not thinking about reducing your waste and reusing items, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I think that's such an important part because I think recycling, I think, has become sort of a default. Well, this is what I'm doing and this is sort of, you know, how I'm trying to live a more sustainable life. And that was certainly something that I took away from our pre-interview conversation, was just the importance of these other two steps as well.
Yeah. And recycling has hit some road bumps here in the last few years from a global perspective, and has really woken people up to the fact that we have sort of leaned too heavily on recycling and it's not a perfect system. There are improvements we can make in the recycling system for sure. And we are, to the extent that, you know, it takes a while to ramp those improvements up. We are starting to make some of those changes. But it's definitely not something that should be the only act. And it, for a long time, it's really served as that thing that people would do and say to make them feel better about their impact on the environment. And really the focus ought to be well before you get to the point of even being able to recycle is the choices you're making as consumers.
I remember you giving a statistic about Indiana and its recycling efforts. It was pretty shocking to me. And I'm assuming that statistic is why you think there's such a great economic development opportunity for Indiana. Remind me what that statistic is.
Yeah, so there's a few statistics that taken in context together really drives home the shocking factor of the recycling rate in Indianapolis. So the national average for recycling across the U.S. is right about 35%. The state of Indiana has a recycling rate of about 20%, so below the national average. And then you've got the recycling rate in the city of Indianapolis at 3.4%. So less than 4% of materials in Marion County, by this is a tonnage percentage, are recycled. So it's really shockingly bad in the city of Indianapolis.
Yeah, that is a little shocking. So this could be an entire, like, you know, day of conversation, but can you give some highlights about what it is that IRC is doing to try to combat this?
Yeah, so we are, education, I think, is our main priority. And we are trying to educate all of our stakeholders that go in both in the industry and down to the household level about the situation and why we are where we are today. And simultaneously educate them about the economic development opportunity inherent in increasing our recycling rate from below 4% to closer to the national average. In fact, we want to go beyond the national average. We want to exceed the national average because of the economic development that's already here in the state of Indiana around recycling and the circular economy. We have, when you compare us to other states, because of our manufacturing base, we have the critical element that other states only could dream about when it comes to end markets. We have markets for all the commodities that are in your recycling bin, as well as organics and food waste that are not in your recycling bin and shouldn't be in your recycling bin, but should be diverted from landfills and incinerators for their value as well. So we've got a perfect situation of a mixture in our economy of agriculture that needs soil replenishment and industry, manufacturing industry that needs those commodity materials that have to import those commodity materials from outside the state, even though we produce enough in the state of Indiana to supply those industries that need them. Glass is a great example of where Indiana is set apart from other states. We have, when it comes to glass packaging and fiberglass insulation, we have manufacturers in the state of Indiana that parallel or exceed the presence that other states have. There's a few other Midwestern states surrounding us that also have good presence for those things. But Indiana really has a concentrated presence of manufacturers that are hungry for recycled glass cullet, which is essentially furnace-ready recycled crushed glass. And those manufacturers here in Indiana have to pull glass from outside the state, way outside the state, up into Canada even, to get the cullet that they need to supply their manufacturing facilities. And meanwhile, we are landfilling or incinerating glass like right next door from our own residents. And that's one of those things that when I took this job and I learned about the gap between the demand and the supply, it just kind of blew my mind. And I was like, okay, we have to fix this problem.
So how do you go about trying to fix that problem? Is it more on the corporate side? Is it more on the resident side? Or is it a combination of both?
It's everything. It's everything and everyone. We're all stakeholders in this because we all manage waste at every level. And we also have policies in the state of Indiana that are counterproductive to mm-hmm. getting these materials used in their highest and best ways right here in the state of Indiana. So we have really low landfill tipping fees, which is the fee that a hauler pays when they tip their load at a landfill or an incinerator. And when it's cheaper to throw it away than it is to recycle it, that is a disincentive for recycling. So we've got policies that have been on the books for decades that we need to address like that. We have opportunities to build in incentives for people to divert certain waste streams from landfill or incineration. And we just have an attitude of throw it away and it goes away. And that mm-hmm. That's not true. And, you know, out of sight, out of mind is not true. Just because you don't see it anymore after a truck comes to the end of your driveway and picks it up doesn't mean it isn't a problem for someone else. And so getting people to understand that there are things in their trash that have the capacity and the ability to have more life and to create jobs and to save the environment as well. That is our job. We've got to convey that message down to the individual household level. And we've got to make sure policymakers understand the value of those materials and what it could do for the economy. There's a statistic that every ton of recycled materials creates two jobs if it's in landfilled or put into an incinerator. That same ton of materials recycled could create 10 jobs. So there wow. are, it's pretty significant, you know, the impact we can have on the economy. But it also has obviously side benefits for the environment as well. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of different benefits that are layered on top of each other. And our job is to communicate that and help people understand what they can do as individuals to have an impact in their daily lives.
When you use the word incentivize, my mind goes back to when I was a kid and we used to save our glass bottles to get our nickel back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you say incentivize now, as far as, like, I get the whole, you know, job creation and some of those things you spoke to, but how are individual consumers incentivized? I mean, I know that the environment, better place. Is that what you mean when you say that?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that folks can be incentivized. What you mentioned is a bottle deposit law or a bottle bill that people get cash redemption for returning their bottles. Those are present in about 10 states. That's one mechanism, and that has not been done in the state of Indiana that could be done. Another, you can look at the incentive from a lot of different perspectives. The other could be through those producers that could say, you know, I'm going to put this plastic bottle out into the world, and if I'm incentivized enough, I will do what I need to do to get it back as a recycled bottle so I can continue to make more bottles and not just be generating waste, but actually keeping this material in use as long as possible. Those are called extended producer responsibility policies and laws. So the incentive can be placed in a variety of different perspectives and audiences. Those are all tools that working together can close the loop on a lot of these materials that we're using every day.
Can you explain to our listeners what a wish cycling is?
Yeah, that's a real problem in the world of recycling. And that is when folks wish something could be recycled, or maybe they actually do think it's recycled or recyclable. And they say, well, this is made of plastic, and so I think it should be recycled. And I wish, you know, I hope that it will. I'm going to put it in my recycling bin in the hope that it will get recycled. And the answer to wish cycling is really being educated on what your particular hauler can and will recycle. And not wish cycling requires a tremendous amount of constraint, because just because I want my number one PET plastic strawberry or blueberry clamshell container to be recycled, but I know that my recycling hauler cannot process that. They can't sort that material out to have it recycled. That particular material that it is recyclable, but my hauler cannot physically separate it out and make sure it gets recycled. So I'm going to put that in the trash can. That's tough to do. That is the essence of wish cycling, is wishing something could be recycled and putting it in the recycling bin in the hopes that it will get recycled. And it's a problem because it creates contamination at the recycling sorting facility that slows down the process and therefore is costly to the hauler and ultimately back to you as a consumer.
I think what you just touched upon is probably the most important thing that we could educate people about, because what are the steps to knowing what your hauler can recycle and to find out those wish items where they can be recycled?
Yeah. So the first thing is to know where who your hauler is. And it could be different at home and at work. So you need to be aware of who is your hauler, where you are, where your recycling bin is. And then the next thing is to get on their website. That's typically the best place to find their list of acceptable items. Print that out if you need to and put it on your refrigerator. Make sure your family is aware of it as well, because it's everybody in the household needs to be on the same page and needs to not wish cycle. Look at the things that are on that list, and it's not going to be an exhaustive list of things that you cannot recycle. It will be an exhaustive list of things you can recycle. So knowing the difference between those two things is important. If it's not listed on the list of acceptable items, it goes in the trash. That is difficult for people. There are so many things that you used to recycle, you used to put in the recycling bin. And when you see that it's not on that list of acceptable items and having to put that in the trash, there's like, you know, sad violins playing every time you do that.
I agree.
That's a big thing that when we go out and meet with people, we talk to them, and lately, you know, it's over Zoom, we see that look on their face of, but I've been recycling that for years. You mean that's not getting recycled? And it's like a mini therapy session. You know, you have to kind of like
you know, take them by the hands and say, it's okay, we'll get through this together. And, you know, as you're putting that into the trash can and you're frustrated and maybe you're really angry about the fact that you can't recycle that, try to fuel that, use that as fuel for a broader conversation with your policymakers, with leaders in your community about how can we make sure that more things are packaged in a way that can be recycled. That I, you know, I want more of the things that I buy to be packaged in things that can be put in my recycling bin. And that is where, that's kind of phase two of being a good recycler, is like doing it right, you know, in your own home, at the bin, at the bin level. The next is being conscious of what you're buying and is it in a package that can be recycled? If it's not, is there an alternative way to purchase that item? Or is that even an item you need to purchase?
Right, right. I love when I'm, you know, looking at new, I don't know, you know, they find you on Instagram. If they know you're into sustainability, you know, you are found from the people who package and recycling products, which I'm glad about, but it's also sometimes like, whoa. But the other thing, Allison, I'm wondering about is oftentimes these things that are not recyclable with your hauler, you can still collect and then figure out where you can, you know, reuse them or who would reuse them. Or maybe there's a quarterly, you know, collection of those items, right?
Yes. So there are some items. Styrofoam is one. Electronics is another, where it's a special collections kind of thing. And you can't put it in your curbside bin, but it can be recycled. And there are, we on the IRC website, we have a whole list of resources. You just type in, you click on the button that says, you know, where can I recycle this? And you can put in your zip code and the thing that you're trying to recycle, and it will tell you the locations nearest you where you can take those items. And there are plenty of things. Egg cartons is a great one. You can collect those and give them to an egg, you know, chicken farmer at your local farmer's market, and they can reuse that item. There are, you know, sour cream tubs are great for teachers and art teachers to use for cleaning brushes. So there are, if you're willing to kind of think to that next level and go beyond recycling to think about reuse, there are things you can get more life out of if you're willing to take that next step.
You've inspired me to just kind of do a overhaul of, you know, what I'm recycling. You know, I have these bins in my garage where, you know, they're for those weird items, you know, so I can collect them and try to do something with them. But I feel like I still have gaps based on what you're talking about. So I'm definitely going to have to do a little audit of my household.
So, Allison, how can people learn more about IRC and what you guys do?
Yeah, so first piece of advice is to visit our website, indianarecycling.org, and you can learn about how to recycle, where to take different items for recycling, and you can learn about the resources that we provide. We are getting ready to launch a new program called the Master Recycler Program that will teach people at the very individual level on their mobile device using those, you know, fleeting interstitial moments of your day, like waiting for the bus, to educate you on a whole variety of topics related to recycling and the circular economy. So we are in the process of rolling those things out. We also are hosting webinars about every other month on various topics. We just wrapped up our annual conference. That content for that is on our website. You can still be a participant in that by viewing the pre-recorded sessions and the live sessions that were recorded. There's a lot of different ways to get engaged that are on our website.
Yeah, and I know I've been referencing it as I've been doing COVID cleanup, not really cleanup from COVID, you know, but cleaning my house because there's nothing else I can really be doing.
So I've been going there a lot, getting resources, Allison. It's amazing, all the information on your website.
Oh, great. I'm glad you found it really helpful. There's a lot of people that are donating right now and selling and, you know, going through garages and basements right now. And that's a good thing, keeping these things in motion and trying to find ways to keep them out of landfills. That's always a good thing.
Well, thank you, Allison. This has been great. Very, very useful for listeners, not only those in Indiana, but throughout the country. So thanks for taking some time to talk with us today.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. This is my favorite thing to talk about, and we've got a lot of room for improvement in the state of Indiana. So the more people we can get engaged in being part of the solution, the better. So thank you, ladies, for having me today.
Kathy, today's nomination for our Taking Care in Community segment is for a group that we both have familiarity with, the Indiana Philanthropy Alliance.
Oh, my gosh, IPA. I love IPA.
I do, too. For those that aren't familiar with them, they're a nonprofit membership association, which is also referred to as a philanthropy supporting organization, or PSO, of and for Indiana's grant-making community. They represent philanthropic organizations, companies, and individuals from all 92 Indiana counties. And they were nominated because of some great resources that they have available on their website that are especially valuable during this time. So I checked it out. I went to their website, which is inphilanthropy.org. And then if you, the easiest way to get to them, I mean, you can kind of go through the motions and hit resources, and you'll have to scroll through all their resources because they have tons of them. But if you put in inphilanthropy.org and then just /diversity, you're going to find some that are particularly relevant right now. One is called Grant Making with a Racial Equity Lens. And the other is called the Racial Equity Resource Guide. And I know that I, in particular, was happy to see those. I know, trying to stay compliant with grants is something that is always of importance. And I think that in the coming months and even years, that having these racial equity resource guides and things available are going to be ever more important. So I wanted to thank National Bank of Indianapolis for making it possible that we could bring this resource to the attention of our listeners.
Wonderful. We'll have to check it out. Thanks.
Let's give a big thank you to our sound engineer, Matt Sosi.
Woo-hoo!
And our Taking Care in Community sponsor, National Bank of Indianapolis. If you'd like to nominate someone or an organization for a future episode, you can visit our website, takingcareinbusiness.com.
Don't forget to subscribe, follow, or download Taking Care in Business wherever you get our podcasts. If you love Taking Care in Business, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review or share this episode on your social media. We are on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Taking Care in Biz, B-I-Z. If you have questions or comments, you can also email us at info@takingcareinbusiness.com. Thank you for joining us today, and until next time, take care in business.